Ooh, let me turn the mic on there. Sorry, Tyler. 806.
That might help.
I got to turn your mic on, too. Just start talking, the mic's off, and nothing happens, man.
Hey, we can just let the music roll.
Yeah, it's a good song, Firestone. No, what is this called? Yeah, Fire and Brimstone. A little trombone okay. Shorty. Which like means it. That Chip Towers is about to join us from the AJC.com. Always a good morning. We got Chip on.
You know how I knew Chip Towers was about to join us?
Because Trombone Shorty's playing.
Well, I got the notification from the 960 The Ref app.
That's right. Tap the app, download it wherever you get your apps from, and you can take 960 The Ref on the go. And you can listen to folks like Chip Towers, who is joining us right now from the AJC.com, a man that was just brushing his teeth when I called him off the air. How you doing this morning, Chip?
I'm honored to be on your app. I'll say that first off.
Now, did you get the notification from the app just now with your name on it? Is that one of those you write home to mom about and say I'm famous?
Yeah, to get that app notification, I know I've made it now.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for joining us as always this morning, Tyler Head and Logan Booker, along with you on a very beautiful Tuesday morning. This spring has been nothing short of spectacular, Chip, even though we're in a global pandemic. Have you been able to enjoy the weather to some extent?
Yeah, really have. It's been, you know, surprisingly cool late into the year, it seems like to me. You know, we haven't, usually by the time you get to May, one of my great sports memories is covering, used to be the NCAA tennis tournament, you know, every year.
Oh, yeah.
In Athens, and I just remember it being stifling hot, you know, all the time. There was one year that Coach McGill brought his temperature gauge that he had hanging on the wall in his office, brought it out onto the Henry Field Stadium courts, and I think it said 120 degrees or something.
No thanks.
When we did that, so yeah, it's been remarkably mild. It's been great, and but I tell you what, I'm tired of being at home. I'm ready. I'm ready to get back at it. How about you, guys?
I'm with you. Yeah, we learned this morning a term called BlackBerry winter. Have you heard of that before?
I have. That goes way back.
Yeah, I was going to say that's some like southern language.
Winter, and that's when it stays cold a little longer than it should.
I guess it's a cold snap after the blueberries have what do you call them, blossomed, fruited. I don't know what you call that, but the blackberries on the vine, then we get a cold snap. So wearing that sweatshirt this morning, no doubt. Chip, since we've talked to you last week, there's been a lot of, I don't want to say developments, but a lot of interviews, some quotes from a lot of important people regarding what the college football season may look like. I know NCAA President Mark Emmert has made some comments, and I guess week to week we hear different things. Do students have to be on campus? Do they not in order for football season to start? If you don't mind, just catch us up. Where are we on May 12th in terms of what we're expecting a football season to look like?
Well, you know, I warned you of this last week. The one thing about where we are right now is it is just speculative. Mm-hmm. And it's even speculative among the power brokers such as Mark Emmert. I mean, that, you know, he has an idea, and there are all kinds of contingency plans that everybody has. The problem, and Mark Emmert touched on this in one of his most recent interviews, is not everybody's on the same page just yet. You know, mm-hmm. if you're in a conference that happens to touch the state of New York or be in the state of New York, or certainly in California and some other areas, you're going to have different sentiments than perhaps people in Georgia or Alabama do. And so the real dilemma right now that I think everybody is starting to consider is what if everybody doesn't want to play? And if everybody doesn't want to play, what's that going to look like? So that's the latest contingency that's being run through. I think there are, I'm like you, I think there's positive developments in that we seem to be getting closer and closer to a quote-unquote flattened curve. At least here in Georgia, we seem to be getting closer and closer to a reality that there will be football in the fall.
Mm-hmm.
It remains option A, option B, option C as to what that will look like once it gets here. And I honestly just don't know which option is more likely at this moment.
Go ahead, Tom.
I was going to say, you mentioned it's kind of up to the conferences individually what they're going to do. when you look at a conference like the Pac-12, obviously has a lot of California schools. I know the governor of Oregon said they weren't going to have any live events all the way through September. So let's say a conference like the Pac-12, only maybe 5 or 6 of their teams can compete this fall. And let's say the Big 12 is in the same boat. Would it be possible for those two conferences to maybe even combine for one season to try and get the season in just because they have such low numbers?
Well, I would say yes, it's possible, but I would say it's unlikely. I mean, you know, if there's anything, any one thing in the world where borders are pretty strong, I would say it's, you know, college athletics and their conferences. But what you might see is them come together and combine to make a schedule. So whatever number that ends up being, what is there? I guess a 130 Division I football programs. There may be a declaration date in the future about you're going to play or you're not going to play. And, you know, if that looks like something other than, you know, 14 SEC teams or, you know, 8 Big 12 teams, it's weird to say there's 10 teams in the Big 12, but, you know, if you don't have enough to obviously play a conference schedule, then I think everybody's going to have a scheduling dilemma. We talk about it all the time. For you guys on the radio, it's one of the best fodder there is for talk radio discussion is what are future schedules going to look like, who are you going to play? Well, that gets really a lot more difficult when you don't have a full quorum of teams to play against. So, again, I think it's great to speculate about, but I still think it's a little early to discuss those kind of possibilities. But, yet, Tyler, absolutely. That, you know, combining the Pac-12 and the Big 12 to come up with a 11-12 game schedule, I think is a possibility.
I know that the University of Georgia president this last week made some comments, and I know that the athletics director Carla Williams very tied to Georgia here as well. But the two teams set to play September 7th, a neutral site game in Atlanta. But it sounds like one. I would say Virginia seems a little bit more skeptical, if you want to say that, or maybe even more guidelines need to be in place than what we've heard maybe here in Georgia, as kind of the notion just get players on campus and get them isolated and get them ready to play. But I guess at this point what I'm asking you, Chip, is just gauge your optimism or pessimism that that game happens and if we do just have to go to a conference schedule.
Well, I do think, as I've been pretty staunch about, you know, for the last several weeks, I mean, I do believe there will be a college football season based on what I've seen. And, again, what it looks like is very unclear. You know, Virginia and Georgia specifically playing, I would say the odds are pretty good that they do that. But what the question that still has to be worked out is what's that going to look like? And, you know, one of the scenarios that I'm hearing pushed more and more that kind of makes a little bit of sense to me is if you do play a college football season, you know, it'll be basically students and players' families that would be in attendance and everybody else is watching on TV. You know, that makes sense to me from the standpoint of, you know, that's a controlled group. Everybody can be tested and you can be reasonably sure that for that particular day, you know, everybody's healthy and not going to spread the virus. But, you know, when you start getting into a neutral site game when you're not on campus, like you're going to have with the Chick-fil-A kickoff game, that's probably a whole another set of standards. The bottom line is, based on that contract, you know, both sides, both parties are going to have to be in agreement to what you do. And how Carla Williams is feeling and Greg McGarrity in particular at this moment in time probably doesn't matter as much as it will a month from now. I mean, I think June is a really important month. We're sitting here in the middle of May right now, and so that gives us 30 days. You know, as we've seen with the coronavirus updates and the World Health Organization updates, you know, a lot can happen in a month's time. But I think when you get much beyond June, it starts to get logistically very, very difficult to make stuff happen. So I think June's a really important month. I think we still have time on our side, and I think it's important to those in leadership and organization, college athletics, to have a plan ready to roll out when they get the all clear. But we're not very close to that based on what I'm seeing right now.
You mentioned one thing just a second ago that triggered something I've been speculating a lot recently. If the season is a little different in terms of fans in the stands, and they do let a very small number of fans in the stands, could it be students? Could it be McGill Society donors or regular season ticket donors? I'm sure there is a storm brewing if it comes to that, and I'm not sure that I envy Greg McGarrity or Josh Brooks right now in having to make that decision as to who gets in, who gets out, but I see that being a very hot topic as we get closer to a season if it looks like that.
Yeah, that's a big storm brewing, but I think most of that storm is going to be played out, you know, on Zoom calls that we, you know, might not be privy to seeing.
Right.
Where you get to that, because that is putting your president and athletic director in a very difficult position.
Right.
Say this set of people can come in, and this set, you know, we've seen it already over beer, you know, mm-hmm. and it's a divisive topic. I mean, that's a divisive thing as it is. One of the wonderful things about, you know, higher education is the advent of athletics and their ability to raise money from school. That's also a very divisive topic. You know, you have people who have the means or the will to donate huge amounts of money to their alma mater in order to get access. And that leaves out a lot of other people who may have a different sentimentality, mm-hmm. whether they can afford it or not afford it. So, you know, I don't think the conferences, if you belong to a conference, are going to let that happen. They're going to make these decisions along conference lines now that, you know, again, as we were just talking about, there may be a couple of institutions that don't fall in line with whatever their greater organization is. But I think I think that'd be a very rare occasion that happens. And I think most of the difficulties are going to be found, you know, in the Northeast and possibly in the Midwest or out West for sure.
Makes sense. Talking to Chip Towers on the phone from the AJC.com.
You just touched on it there. Let's say what you just mentioned a moment ago does happen. We're playing football only in front of students and faculty from the University of Georgia. What kind of financial hit would that be to a program like Georgia and others around the country?
Well, it would be a different kind of hit to a program like Georgia than it would to a lot of other ones. You know, all of us have heard the criticism and accusations of Greg McGarrity, his stewardship being overly conservative in terms of saving money and directing money to the UGA Foundation. But I think this is a perfect example of why you do that. And so, I mean, George, look, don't misunderstand. Georgia would be hurt by such a thing. You know, if you're talking about refunding in the neighborhood of 55,000 or 60,000 season ticket holders, you know, that's going to be a financial hit. But it'd be one Georgia could absorb. Now, it's not one that a lot of others. I don't know where you know, governmental safeguards might come into play and help college athletics like they have some other businesses as a result of this. Outside of that, you know, there are a lot of athletic programs that would be devastated. And, you know, most of them in the SEC, probably not initially, but, you know, you're already seeing situations where furloughs have been enacted. Some coaches have been asked to accept 10% less than the salary and so on and so on. We haven't seen any of that happen at the University of Georgia yet within the athletic arena. But you know, I don't close the door on it. It could happen.
Chip, let's switch gears a little bit. A lot of speculation, a lot of unknowns. It gets stressful and tiresome from time to time. Something we know is awesome, and that's listening to Larry Munson on a Friday afternoon. We had to cut your interview a little bit short last week. We had some phone issues, but we played Friday, the 1991 Clemson victory, a great day in Sanford Stadium. You may have seen the upcoming schedule. May 15th, the 87 Kentucky game. May 22nd, the 92 Tech game. May 29th, the 87 Florida game. And June 5th, the 92 Auburn game are all going to be played on the 960 The Ref in the afternoons. But you were telling us last week before we had to let you go, you had some pretty good memories of that 91 game. And listening to Munson on a Friday afternoon had to be a nice nostalgic look back at that.
Well, listening to it on a Friday afternoon was fun and no less exciting. You know, I'm reminded of several things. But by the way, I did get to listen to that mm-hmm. for a good amount of time. I was actually having to be in the car on Friday and was able to listen to you guys and caught a whole lot of that broadcast. And, you know, it's just so it's so fun to hear Larry on the airwaves again, because he was so incredibly descriptive mm-hmm. from the very outset of the game. You know, they're in the silver britches with the red, black, and white lines down.
Get the picture.
Side,
yep.
You know, yeah. I mean, he would get you the picture every time, and you know, so descriptive with everything. And boy, especially, you know, early on, before he got in the later years and he had more difficulty seeing the field from the press box, he was just one of a kind and a Hall of Famer for a good reason. But I think that's been probably one of the most enjoyable things about the entire pandemic. I miss live sports worse than anybody. You know, this is my vocation. This is what I do.
Mm-hmm.
But I've also covered all these things. And what happens when you do this for a living, you know, over 30 years, you tend to forget a lot of the details. You know, sometimes you remember details in other people, but sometimes you forget, like the 1980 game when they replayed that on ESPNU mm-hmm. this past week. You know, I forgot so much that happened besides Beluga Scott, right? Or besides Herschel Walker had a big day. You know, those two things, I mean, so, yeah, Herschel Walker had a big day. He had a huge day. I mean, that guy was incredible. This just in, but seeing it live is one thing. And then there's just the strategy and what happened. I mean, I forgot that Wayne Pease was a freshman, the quarterback for Florida. Watching him, I was like, golly, he was pretty doggone good.
Yeah, he was.
You know, as a freshman. And then that defense and Mike Fisher. I forgot about the interception late. I forgot about that the penalty flags were thrown on the touchdown for excessive celebration, but they were assessed on the kickoff rather than on the two-point conversion try. There's just a lot of details that you forget about over time. Same thing with the 91 game. I mean, I think most of us would probably agree. I remembered this because I'd had conversations in the calendar year with Eric Zier about it, but a lot of people probably didn't remember. He didn't start that game, you know. Greg Talley started that mm-hmm. game, and Eric Zier came off the bench and had an unbelievable day, and then everything that happened with the Braves the same day. So I don't know if you caught this, but I caught up with Sunday Out of Games just this past week as well, the star of Georgia's 2008 SEC Tornado team. Now, my intention was to talk to Sunday Out for an SEC Tornado respective that we're running in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution as part of our Bizarre series, mm-hmm. and that'll be coming up. But I just found out so much more about Sundiata and kind of a where are they now sense. That guy has been literally all around the world. He makes it into New York City from Saudi Arabia, where he's playing as a starting point guard, literally hours before the borders close.
Mm.
And God bless him, a wonderful, wonderful young man, but lost his mother to COVID-19. So, you know, I wrote that story in the AJC this past week. So the stories are all around. You just kind of find them. And the retrospectives for me have been, you know, really, really a fun walk down memory lane.
I hated hearing that about his mom, obviously. But no, that was a great write-up. That is on AJC.com right now, a great write-up of Sunday Out of Gaines. And you're right. And we talked to Professor Vicky Michaelis, Tyler and I, last week about – You just said it, during a time like this when sports shuts down, that does not mean the stories stop. And Chip, you've done a great job finding them for us along the way.
Well, I appreciate it. And you know, certainly not as prolific, any of us, as we normally would. Besides you, Logan and Tyler, you guys have not slowed down a second.
We tried.
You know, all of us, I think, have slowed down to some degree and kind of smelled the roses. And whenever we get on the other side of this thing, you know, I think about my 12-year-old son, and we've had some talks about it, you know, and he's going to remember the pandemic of 2020, and I just hope there's a bunch of happy endings waiting for us around the corner, and hopefully that'll be, you know, somewhere around September 7th.
No doubt. Let me ask this, make sure I'm saying this right. Was this your daughter's first Mother's Day as a mother?
It was,
awesome.
Danielle's first Mother's Day. Oh, it was absolutely fantastic. You know, we're still being pretty careful, you know, on the stay in place thing. But we did go by and see her and take some flowers and talk in the doorway and do all that kind of stuff. She had a wonderful day. Her husband took good care of him, and Lachlan was beautiful and wonderful and the best. I'm sorry, everybody else out there, but the best grandchild in the world.
Everybody else is going for second place, Chip.
I know it.
That's
right. But no, that was it. Was a lot of fun, and we enjoyed it. And listen, if there's anybody who's ready for the pandemic to get over, it's my daughter who has been home with an infant child.
Oh man,
who was born preemie all the way through into this thing. She deserves a respite herself.
I'm sure. My wife and I, mid-30s, no kids, and we're laughing at everybody that told us to have kids for so long. I said, the joke's on you these last couple of months, because we got peace and quiet in the house. But, Chip, as always, we very much appreciate your time. Glad we got the phones up and running, working well today, so no interruptions, and great stuff at always. Go check out all of Chip's stuff at AJC.com, and you do a great job bringing it to us. And, Chip, we're one day closer to something happening, whatever that may be.
Catch you on the other side.
Thanks, Chip. We'll talk to you again soon. Chip Towers of the AJC.com.
Great stuff and no technical difficulties this time.